This is 2023-0393 in the matter of the State of Ohio versus Michael Dudas. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Wilhelm. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Wilhelm on behalf of Michael Dudas. I'd like to request 4 minutes for rebuttal. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, the question here is, what does the term direct appeal mean? But more fundamentally, we're asking whether a defendant who is granted a delayed appeal has the same fundamental or has the same statutory right to comprehensive review of their conviction as a defendant who files a timely appeal. The answer to that question is yes, because the plain language of 2953.21A2A requires that that answer be yes. So turning to that, the plain language of the text, there are two sentences in A2A. The first essentially suggests that, or states that a defendant who files a direct appeal has 365 days from the date in which the transcript is filed in the Court of Appeal to file their petition for post-conviction relief. A delayed appeal is a direct appeal. A direct appeal is an appeal of the judgment of conviction from a lower court, and a delayed appeal is an appeal of the judgment of conviction from a lower court, albeit an untimely one. That is consistent with what this court has held, not on this direct statutory question, but in other cases. Silsby, Jackson, and a few other cases, this court has used the term delayed direct appeal. That is also consistent with what lower courts have said. Again, not in this particular statutory situation, but lower courts, the courts of appeals, have consistently held that, or stated that a delayed appeal is a type of direct appeal. And this makes sense. Again, it's in Silsby, this court recognized that substantively procedurally, once a delayed appeal has been granted, it proceeds the exact same way as a timely appeal. There is no difference. It's just the Court of Appeals has granted leave. Once that happens, it becomes a direct appeal. It's also consistent with the rules of appellate procedure. Now, direct appeal is undefined in the statute. It's undefined in the rules of appellate procedure. That term does appear just once in the rules of appellate procedure in Rule 6D, where that rule is essentially stating that when there is a direct appeal and a petition for post-conviction relief going on concurrently, the appellant is meant to include all the cases that are pending at the same time, provide those to the court. And I think that rule does two things. One, it shows that what a direct appeal is different from sort of collateral attack, a different sort of appeal. If a petition for post-conviction relief was pending on appeal, that would still be different from a direct appeal. But that rule also, and the hypothetical here, if Mr. Dudas, who filed for a delayed appeal 6 months after his timely appeal time had lapsed, if he had filed his delayed appeal and say that same day, within 6 months, he filed a petition for post-conviction relief, the state would say, that's fine, that's consistent with their interpretation of statute. Nobody would have a problem with that petition for post-conviction relief. If they're correct and a delayed appeal is not a direct appeal, then Mr. Dudas would not have to list any of his pending cases pursuant to 6D. It just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that a defendant who has to list those cases pursuant to 6D for a timely appeal would not have to do that for a delayed appeal. So that's the first sentence. The second sentence, if no appeal is taken, a defendant has to file their petition for post-conviction relief within 365 days of when that appeal should have been filed. So here, we believe those sentences are working in concert, and they really contemplate the two most common situations where a defendant would file a petition for post-conviction relief. The first is following an appeal, and the second is if they don't take an appeal, then a defendant could file their petition for post-conviction relief within those 365 days. If they don't, and then are later granted an appeal, like Mr. Dudas, then we return to the first sentence, because an appeal has been taken. So that's really where we are. And in terms of, you know, I think that the state is going to suggest that these words have a different meaning. And I just wanted to leave the court with this, which is, we're referring to the plain language. This is what the plain language says. But the rules of appellate procedure, these Supreme Court decisions, these lower court decisions, have been out before 2010 when the legislature amended the statute to change it from 180 days to 365 days. So the legislature is aware that courts understand delayed appeals to be part of direct appeals, and they didn't change the language. So again, we're just going back to the plain language. And if there are no questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time.
I don't understand how that last point helps you, since most of the appellate courts have found that a delayed appeal have imposed this contra-textual rule that a delayed appeal doesn't fall, is an appeal for purposes of the rule.
So it's,
and so if the, and by your logic, the legislature the legislature could have changed that, and they chose not to.
Well, the legislature, that's certainly true, Your Honor, that the courts of appeals, when looking at this particular question, have stated that they believe that the language of the text indicates a different result than what we're asking for. But the logic behind those opinions and the logic behind what the 8th District did here was all policy-oriented.
I don't disagree with any of that.
But you made
the point, while the legislature saw what was going on, they could have changed it. Doesn't that cut against you?
No, Your Honor, because the legislature saw what this court said and what the rules of appellate procedure said, and they're sticking with the understanding that this court has and what the rules of appellate procedure imply.
Picking up on the rules. So the General Assembly gives people a right of appeal, right?
Yes.
They didn't set a timeline set by Rule 3A. It's 30 days. It isn't until then you get to Rule Number 5, and that's a right of direct appeal on Rule 3A. But then the court created an avenue for an exception. And it doesn't call it a direct appeal. It says in Rule 5, appeals by leave of court after the expiration of the 30-day period for the filing of a notice as of a right, an appeal may be taken on these issues only with leave. But it's called a delay appeal. It's not called a direct appeal in the rules.
That's true, Your Honor. Direct appeal only appears in 6D, and delayed appeal mentioned in 5A, and then he calls it an appeal for leave of court, because that's the only way that a delayed appeal can come into being. It's by leave of court.
So when the General Assembly wrote the statute at issue here, and it says upon expiration of the time, they have 365 days. You believe that was an open window. What's the effect of 365 days? What's the second sentence of the statute and the effect of it?
So it depends on that first sentence, if no appeal is taken. And so if a defendant were to file a petition for post-conviction relief, and there's no requirement that a petition for post-conviction relief follow a direct appeal, we'd certainly, you know, my experience recommend that it does, so that the record can be examined. But if they file within 365 days, then they've filed a petition for post-conviction relief within 365 days where no appeal is taken.
But you said so yourself, that it's not defined, and the General Assembly didn't use the words delayed appeal.
Yeah, and perhaps I'm struggling to understand your question, Your Honor. So there would never be an untimely appeal. We're certainly not arguing that past that 30-day window, a timely appeal can still exist. The only way, a delayed appeal doesn't exist until the Court of Appeal grants the motion
Correct.
For delayed appeal.
I guess I'm struggling with the language in the statute and the language in our rules, because Rule 5 doesn't talk about a direct appeal. It only says delayed, judicially created, that if you've missed your 30-day window, you can maybe file this with leave of court. But the General Assembly would seem very specific to me, not later than that 365 days after the direct appeal. They don't use the language delayed appeal.
No, they don't, but they also don't use the language if no timely appeal is taken, and certainly the legislature, if they wanted to clarify, could have done that. But they're, again, creating the two situations. If an appeal is taken, if a direct appeal is taken. That's what the first sentence bears out. And again, we're just returning to this court's understanding of what a delayed appeal it is, and a delayed appeal is a direct appeal.
So you would say that the state would be on firmer ground if the General Assembly would have said no timely appeal had been taken?
Yes, Your Honor. I think we can only go to the plain language, and it says if no appeal is taken. And certainly a delayed appeal is an appeal.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Vann, good morning.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court. My name is Daniel Vann. I represent the state of Ohio. I'm an assistant prosecuting attorney from Cuyahoga County. Contrary to appellant's position, several appellate courts, and this has been going on for two decades now, the 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, and 10th, have now all interpreted 2953.21A2 and have held that the direct appeal described in the first sentence does not include a delayed appeal. Now, this is a jurisdictional question, but we would ask this court here today to affirm or to affirm the judgment of the 8th District and to hold that the direct appeal does not include a delayed appeal. Now, the state's arguments, which run contrary to the arguments raised by appellant, fully outlined in our briefs, but for today, you know, the state would direct the court to a few points. It is our position, first of all, that the plain and ordinary language of 2953.21A2, now we're looking at the word direct appeal, and probably more completely direct appeal of the conviction. I think it's notable here that the General Assembly did not use the words appeal of the conviction. It modified appeal with the word direct. Under, you know, canons of statutory interpretation, we must look at the full text. We must give effect to each word. No word should be a surplusage. We have to give effect to the word direct. And I think looking, first of all, generally at
just... But doesn't direct have a pretty commonly understood meaning when it modifies appeal? I mean, a direct appeal is pretty universally understood as an appeal that comes directly from the underlying judgment, not a post, as opposed to a post-conviction attack or some other kind of collateral attack. Isn't that the common legal understanding of direct appeal? Why wouldn't we just apply that and stop there?
And I think, yes, Your Honor, there are various readings of the word direct appeal. And if we go back to one of the earlier cases, State versus Byrd, that's out of Franklin, or 10th District, it's been adopted by appellate courts. The 8th District in State versus Fields in 99 followed its reasoning. But if you kind of look at that source case, State versus Byrd, it discusses all the various understandings of the word direct appeal, and it's not universal. So yes, there are instances in which direct appeal includes delayed appeal. There are instances in which there's a description of a direct appeal or a delayed appeal. There's other instances in which courts have described direct delayed appeals. So there are different readings of that word, direct appeal. And if we just kind of get back to kind of like a understanding of the word direct, which, you know, as we described in our brief, as an adjective, you know, that usually connotes something that goes on without like an interruption. So when I look at that, in our reading, a delayed appeal does have an interruption. It's not an appeal of right. It is a type of appeal where appellant must first seek leave of the Court of Appeals to obtain that appeal.
Once a delayed appeal is granted, it proceeds just as a direct appeal, correct?
For purposes of appellate procedure, and it's also a qualified direct appeal or a qualified delayed direct appeal because, yes, this court in State versus Silsby addressed two questions. And the two questions, and I think this needs to be fully fleshed out, is that, you know, the court first addressed, once a delayed appeal is granted, what's the procedure? And this court held that the procedure is the same as if it's a direct appeal under the appellate rule. So that was a question of procedure. But still, that was not a true direct appeal. And we can see that particularly—
Isn't a delayed appeal just someone who has chosen to file no appeal but later decides to and is granted leave of court? Wouldn't that be the best way to characterize it?
Yes, you are. And because of the nature of a delayed appeal in which the defendant doesn't have that appeal of right, So I think it is important to understand that direct appeal does not have a fixed meaning if we were to look at case law as guidance. So even with case law, there's no fixed meaning of the word direct appeal. And I think what's important for 2953.21A2 is to look at the second sentence. If no appeal is taken, then it comes from 365 days of the expiration of the time to file that appeal. Rule used to be 180 days. It's 365 days now. The word appeal in that second sentence refers back to the direct appeal mentioned in the first one. And I think that reading makes sense from a plain reading. And I think the second sentence is, again, important because it talks about the expiration of time. I think that's the key point. No direct appeal in this case was taken when the time had expired.
Well, if that's what the legislature meant, or if that's what the rulemakers meant, you could, why not just say direct appeal? That's not what it says. It doesn't say if no direct appeal is taken. It says if no appeal is taken.
Sure. And I think one way to look at that, if we look at the word direct as an adjective that modifies the noun appeal, for sake of, brevity, so to speak, that it's understood when you look at the entire provision that the...
I guess that argument just loses me. I mean, why wouldn't you think that it's, instead of just assuming that appeal can only mean direct appeal, just that appeal means exactly what it says, if no appeal is taken? Why? I mean, we don't have to do anything other than apply the plain language.
And certainly, going back to my earlier point, the General Assembly could have dispensed with the word direct altogether and just used the phrase appeal of the conviction. And if for comparison purposes, if we were to look at the court's appellate rules 26B, which refers to an appellant being able to take in file and reopening from the appeal of conviction, There is no modification there of, you know, direct appeal of conviction. So what I would say is that the word direct must have meaning here in that first sentence. And that refers, as the several appellate courts have held, referring to the timely appeal. And again, that is consistent with the second sentence of that statute, which refers to the expiration time, the expiration to file the appeal. And under the appellate rules, the time to file that appeal is 30 days from the entry of the judgment of conviction. So overall, it's the state's position that the court needs to look beyond just as appellate, and you know, in our view, it seems that appellant's primary contention is look at State versus Silsby as their primary case. That's their primary source in which they argue that direct appeal in the statute also means delayed appeal. But even under Silsby, the defendant. Who filed a delayed appeal was not able to take advantage of the case that was at issue, State versus Foster, the case from this court over Apprendi and sentencing statutes. So really in that case, what I would say is that the overall holdings in Silsby, it wasn't that in all instances direct appeal includes delayed appeal. The holding in Silsby was that the procedures follow the same procedures in direct appeal. But in that instance, the defendant was not able to raise, you know, the same type of claims that perhaps other defendants might raise in the first instance. It was a very qualified type of appeal that the defendant could take. And just one example of, you know, how words can have different meanings depending on the context. So in our brief, we cited to a case about the word conviction, which, you know, as the prosecutor ordinarily, the word conviction includes both the verdict and sentence, but in certain sentencing or certain statutory structures where we see the words plea or conviction, in those instances, this court has recognized that the word conviction has a different meaning in that context under that statutory framework, meaning that in that instance, courts have held in other instances that conviction would be the guilty verdict. So if there's anything I would urge this court to take away from our argument and our briefs is that direct appeal doesn't have a fixed meaning, that when we look at the statutes in its entirety, it's understood based on the it's understood that direct appeal does not include delayed appeal. It's supported by, understanding of the word direct based on the dictionary definition. And to really give effect to this second sentence of that statute, overall with regards to the expiration time frame, I think that's important. I think that's important, and I think this court would also be fully guided by the 10th District's decision in Byrd. And again, several appellate courts have followed it. The 8th District early on adopted it in State versus Fields. So there's plenty of support, and much of these arguments have been rejected by the appellate court. So,
but Silsby, in paragraph 17, says that, I mean, it's from this court, it's from 2008, and we say a delayed appeal granted pursuant to Appellate Rule 5 is treated the same as a direct appeal under Appellate Rule 4A, and the case proceeds as if it had been timely filed. What is, what's hard to understand about that? I mean, why does that not settle the issue, and why is it that we should read some other meaning into it when you're doing your allegory to sentencing and conviction?
Sure, and I'm not, it's the context of the decision, and that holding was with respect to the rules of appellate procedure, and so what it proceeds as the same as a direct appeal under appellate rule 4, so how we brief a case, you know, the course of a case during the appellate process, which is different from the statutory interpretation we're urging this court to adopt here today. And again, it just goes back to, I would direct the court back to
But didn't the legislature approve our rules under appellate rule 4? I mean, we don't just make these rules in a vacuum. I mean, sometimes the legislature rejects our rules. So why should we reject our rules if the legislature already approved them and you think that we should be following something else in a statute? Why should we if the rules are there?
Well, I'm not asking this court to ignore its own interpretation of the rules. The rules of appellate procedure don't include a specific definition of the word direct appeal. And again, what Silsby was about was what was the procedure here to follow, and what issue could the appellant raise in his appeal? And it wasn't a complete direct, like a complete direct appeal where he was able to raise anything under the record. Specifically, what that defendant was concerned about was the application, or whether or not he could raise issues under State versus Foster, and this court held that he could not. And again, the state's arguments here today are supported by the holdings of the appellate courts, all of which looked at the various kind of definitions of the or understandings of the word direct appeal. And there has been recognition among the courts that there is certainly a difference between a direct appeal and a delayed appeal. Again, we've seen cases that refer to direct appeal or delayed appeal, delayed direct appeal. So it's not a fixed definition.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Wilhelm, you have 4 minutes and 5 seconds left.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to turn first to Justice DeWine's question about direct appeal, and it is a term of art. You don't just look to the modifier direct. Direct appeal is a word in itself, and really it refers to what is being appealed, not the timeliness of the appeal, and that's why a delayed appeal is a direct appeal, and that's consistent, Justice Bruner, with what this court said in Silsby. It's consistent with Jackson, Ishmael, Carter, and it's consistent with the rules of appellate procedure. I believe Mr. Van, said twice something to the effect of there's instances where courts have used direct appeal and delayed appeal interchangeably. There's instances where courts have used delayed direct appeal. That's the understanding of the phrase or the word direct appeal. That's the plain language of direct appeal. It's only here in this statute that Mr. Van and the state is asking this court to ignore its rules, to ignore its prior decisions, and just to fix a different meaning than what has been consistently understood. And we're asking this court to just look to the plain language, find that a delayed appeal is a direct appeal, and grant Mr. Dudas the relief we're requesting.
So State v. Byrd is in the context of post-conviction, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And again, you know, the state is saying context is everything, and certainly there's no getting around that when appellate districts have looked to this particular statute, they're stating this is how we're going to interpret direct appeal. But in every single instance, Byrd, the 8th District's opinion below, they're doing it for policy reasons, and they're saying, you know, we're looking for finality, and we just point this court to the Supreme Court's decision in Jimenez, where there were similar concerns raised about finality, and the court said, we're looking at what the statute said, and it grants, it reopens the pendency of the direct review when a delayed appeal is granted, and that's what we're looking for. The state's policy concerns, the lower court's policy concerns, you know, simply aren't relevant, or nothing to be nervous about in the way that they're pointing them out. They're saying this is going to reopen. The courts of appeal, as a safeguard, they look at the motion for delayed appeal. That only comes in by leave of court. And if the state is concerned that someone is trying to game the system to file a petition for post-conviction relief, that they've waited, state can point that out in their motion in opposition. And they certainly do that now. And you know, Amicus, the Ohio Public Defender, stated, I believe it's something like they've only done 18 or so delayed appeals over the last couple of years. So this isn't a floodgates problem. The Court of Appeals has a safeguard if the state is concerned. And again, we're just going back to the plain language, and we ask this court to stick to the plain language. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You will receive a decision from the court. Marshall, would you recess the court?
All rise.